independent thinking, unrestricted opinions. You're tuned in to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Oh, our guy is back. Honorary family member of the Killer Bees, Howard Balzer, NFL Hall of Fame voter. It is so good to, again soon, hear your voice again. Howard, thanks for making a few minutes for the Killer Bees.
It's an honor to be reunited. It took a few weeks here, but you know we had to get through that first quote quarter of the season. But here we are. It's always funny now because everyone in the past, all these coaches, they say, well, you know, we break the season into quarters, you know, the four games and all that. Now they play 17, but they still talk about quarters. So whatever it is, but great to be with you guys again.
Howard, I'm going to pretend that you were in the concussion protocol, and here at ESPN 97.5, we take care of those that are in the concussion protocol that have had a blow to the head. But I wanted to hear your opinion on this. You've been watching football for a long time. How do you think the whole handling of Tua went? How much fault are you blaming to Miami, McDaniel, Tua, doctors, NFL? Where do you stand on the whole situation?
Well, it was just awful. I mean, it was just terrible. And the thing about it is that I think the NFL has done a pretty solid job over these last X number of years putting in protocols, adjusting the protocols when they felt they needed adjusting, adding the spotter upstairs to hopefully see if somebody doesn't look right after a play. But to see that happen the way it did is just very troubling. And then, you know what, guys? It happened not to that extent, but something somewhat similar in the Tampa Bay game on Sunday when their tight end Cameron Brate collided headfirst with one of his teammates and was slow getting up, didn't make it to the sideline, never even entered the blue medical tent, no one looked at him, actually came back in the game for a few plays, and then at halftime, it was announced he was in the concussion protocol. Well, yeah, thank God that, or whoever, that nothing happened during those plays that he went back in. So I guess we have to realize to a degree that nothing, no matter what is done with anything, nothing is perfect. But you just got to do a better job. The protocols are there. Follow them. And that is truly, truly the key. So I'm going to be very curious when this is all, when the Tua investigation is done, what are the changes going to be? And that whole gross motor instability aspect of it looks like that's going to be taken out of it, where it gives it out to a doctor to say, well, yeah, he, you know, he had some instability there, but there's no evidence it was a concussion. Well, sometimes you just have to err on the side of caution. Mm-hmm. And that could mean a player coming out of a game, a key player, that it turns out didn't have a concussion. But I think something tells us all that that's better than the alternative, even though it certainly could affect the outcome of a game.
Howard, situation you're right on top of there in Arizona, but in a similar vein, we're talking about J.J. Watt this week. We're talking about arterial defibrillation. We're talking about heart issues. We're talking about a caller that called us yesterday and said he's been through that before, and J.J. should not have been on the field a couple days after going through what he went through, because that's your heart, and it's a dangerous situation. How much more in-depth do you think the league looks at that, too, and question that because of what has happened with Tua?
Well, I think they very well could look at it. I think that one caller who experienced it, we don't know his specific situation. Mm-hmm. In this one, it occurred on Wednesday. Apparently he felt something weird, got it looked at, got it done. All of the doctors that did it said once they got the heart back in rhythm, and it's not necessarily saying that there's something wrong with the heart, it was just out of rhythm for whatever reason, and a lot of times they don't even know why that occurs. And once it's got back in rhythm, they say, hey, you can go back to doing what you're doing. And J.J. Watt came out after the game and said that he was concerned. He was scared. He said, I've had surgeries. I've had pain. I've never been scared of any of that. This scared me because, I mean, he and his wife are expecting to have their first child in a few weeks. And he said, here we are for the last number of months looking at ultrasounds of a baby. And now we're looking at ultrasounds of my heart. Well, he also said that he talked to numerous cardiologists, electrophysiologists, I think was the term. And they all said, if you feel okay, there's no reason why you shouldn't go back and play. And so it obviously is a little bit different than a head situation and what happened there. But he did go back to practice on Friday. He didn't practice on Wednesday and Thursday. After he practiced on Friday and obviously felt pretty good. Now, again, a lot of these protocols for concussions are to protect players from themselves. But in that particular situation, it does appear that not only did J.J. Watt, but the team also talked to as many people as they possibly could to determine that it was okay for him to play.
Howard Balzer joining us on the HRMP guest line, NFL Hall of Fame voter. Howard, we were having the conversation a little bit earlier, Monday Night Football, San Francisco, L.A., a couple of teams that are expected to be contenders in the AFC, Rams defending champions. Who do you think is the best team in the NFC?
Oh, I don't know if I can answer that.
Howard, you can do anything.
I can answer it, but I mean, it's throwing a dart. You know, throwing a dart at a dartboard. Obviously, Philadelphia is at the top of the list only because they're undefeated. But are they better than Green Bay? And will the Packers get their act together? You know, it might be San Francisco. I mean, I kind of laughed, guys, at some of the rankings prior to the season even starting, where some had the 49ers as in power rankings number four. And that was with the belief that Trey Lance would be at quarterback. I don't think there's any doubt the 49ers are a better team right now with Jimmy Garoppolo than Trey Lance, even if Trey Lance was healthy. But this NFC, there's not that many really good teams at the top. And the good teams, you know, probably the Eagles maybe have the fewest questions right now of some of these other teams. You know, Green Bay, are they going to get their act together with receivers? Same thing with Tampa Bay. They just seem to be a disjointed team. The Rams are decimated on the offensive line. It's interesting, guys. I read a story this morning where they all talked about, you know, Matthew Stafford has done this, and they couldn't run the ball, and Cooper Kupp had a great game. Well, Cooper Kupp didn't have a great game, okay? He didn't have a great game. Yes, he had 14 catches, but he only averaged 9.6 yards per reception. They don't have their deep threat, Van Jefferson, who's missed the whole season with a knee injury and is now on injured reserve. Their offensive line, they're starting their third right guard and their third center, and they just don't have much else besides Cooper Kupp. And of course, Matthew Stafford gets the blame. But you know what his average per completion is so far this season? 9.6. Last year for the whole season, it was 12.1. And so it's a different team than it was. And there's a lot of different reasons for it, obviously. So to say who is the best right now, as these teams are trying to find themselves, especially on offense, is pretty tough. So I think in time it could very well be Green Bay, but I can't say whether any of these young receivers are really going to develop to where you have any true confidence in them when they start playing games in November and December and January, and then assuming they make the postseason.
Have faith, Howard. They'll make a trade before the deadline. I have
for
a question.
Well, for who?
Well,
yeah.
You know, I don't know. There's guys out there. I think they can look at Seattle. They can look at a couple places. But I'm curious as it relates to the Texans because of the fact that we're too close to it. We deal with it every day, the Davis Mills conversation. As you being in Arizona but looking at the Texans situation, I said all along, and it wasn't very popular at the start of the year, there was no situation, assuming he plays all 17 games, where you don't take a quarterback next year in the draft because his ceiling looks like it was no better than a top 15 quarterback at best. What's your assessment so far of Mills and the development, which is such a volatile discussion for where people are in here in Houston?
Well, let me ask you this. When you say top 15, you're saying in the NFL?
Yeah. See?
Well, you can win with a top 15 quarterback.
But in the AFC, look at the landscape. You've got Herbert, you got Mahomes, you got Allen.
Good point. No, that's a good point. I can't argue that one. But I don't know that you can make a blanket statement that no matter what happens, you move on or try to get a better quarterback after this season. You have to see how he's going to do over the long haul. He showed some good things at the end of last season. I know this has been rocky to begin this year. There's not tremendous talent around him. And there we go. I think we lose sight so many times. We look at quarterbacks and think that somehow they operate in a vacuum. that they should just be able to almost do it on their own. Well, this is the NFL. You better have the talent around them. We're talking about an Aaron Rodgers who's had some rough goes early in the season. Well, he doesn't have Devontae Adams, and he has a very young receiving core. We just mentioned about the Rams, where Cooper Kupp is down more than almost 4 yards of reception from last season. So you have to have the players surrounding the quarterback before you really know. Now, again, I'm not saying that Davis Mills is a world beater, and it could very well be that the decision is to try and find someone better. But you better be darn sure that you find somebody better, because if you don't, then you're just spinning your wheels.
Who do you like in the college game?
Well, that's a real good question. I haven't looked at it that closely yet. I do have some questions, you know, about Bryce Young. I think he can be a solid guy, but beyond him, I don't pay that close attention to it all this early in the NFL season. So probably not the best time. And there will be someone who will emerge. I mean, you know, hardly anybody talked that much about Justin Herbert during his senior year. Certainly no one talked about Carson Wentz, but maybe that was for good reason. I mean, he had a good start to his career, and a lot has happened, obviously, to him since then. But there will be guys that will emerge and will start being talked about that maybe we're not even talking about right now.
Yeah, happens every year. Howard, thanks so much for taking a few minutes hanging out with the Killer Bees. We'll catch up again next week.
Look forward to it, guys. Take care.
It's Howard Balzer, honorary family member of the Killer Bees and NFL Hall of Fame voter. So Lance McCullers made his final start of the regular season yesterday. Astros just have 2 games left in the regular season. Are you confident with LMJ entering the playoffs? And what is our playoff starting pitcher confidence power rankings with the playoffs in baseball starting this week? It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
And you heard it. Baseball playoffs starting this week. And, of course, on top of that, we've got another weekend of NFL with an early game. In London again with the Giants and the Packers. We've got a full slate of college football. And you know what makes all those games more interesting to a sports fan? The ability to bet on those games. And the only place I tell you to go when you want to place a bet is mybookie.ag. I tell you that because they take care of their customers every step of the way. From the fact that you can pay from Bitcoin to your credit card. From the fact that when you win, they're going to pay you. From the fact that they do all kinds of promotions that you don't even have to pay for to get in on the bet. But if you win, you're going to get more cash in your account. And the fact that they take care of you with things like the prop builder, where if you don't like just betting over-unders and the point spread, you can do something like where you pick a team or pick a player and pick a stat, focus that on the bet, and then MyBookie's prop builder lets you bet that way too. It's fantastic. It's winning season, people, with all the sports. And they have all the sports, UFC, soccer, you name it. They got it. You can bet on it. And they have live in-game betting as well. You've got to check them out. But you can also get the big deal right now. Double your next deposit up to $1,000. It's fantastic. You want to put $200 in your account? You use the promo code BET975. You've got $400 in your account because they want you to have enough money to bet on more games, to win more money, to have more enjoyment out of sports. Check them out right now. Go to mybookie.ag. Use the promo code BET975 on your next deposit up to $1,000. Double that next deposit and have more fun betting on sports. It's fantastic. As I always tell you, bet anything, anytime, anywhere from the only place I tell you to do it. It's mybookie.ag.
Independent thinking, unrestricted opinions. You're tuned in to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
The Houston Astros played baseball yesterday. They lost to the Phillies, saw another team celebrate in their home ballpark. Feel bad for the clubbies there that had to clean that up.
I thought of the same thing.
Yeah.
The fact that, I wonder what that cleanup process, I know they like plastic all over all the lockers, the carpet, the ceiling, all that stench. Ooh.
Hopefully they have a Vivia dumpster rentals ready to go.
Vivia is the place to go.
Throw that's all right. the stuff into that Vivia
dumpster. I don't think Vivia can take care of the stench.
Probably not, yeah. You'll need some gentle bin for that.
Well, you ever walk into a bar like during the day? It's terrible.
Yeah, it's really bad. Astros almost got perfect gamed.
Yeah, they did.
Aaron Nola pitched really well. For the Phillies, former teammate of Alex Bregman over at LSU. Phillies clinch, et cetera, et cetera. Lance McCullers, though, He's been sick. Remember, he hadn't made a start in a little while. This was his first start in a little while. It was also the last start of the regular season. So next time we see Lance McCullers on the mound, it's going to be in the playoffs. We were talking a little bit about this yesterday with Lance. Like, what do you want to see from him? Last start. I think you were around the 90-pitch mark. I was about the 100-pitch mark. He threw 94, went six innings, thought he looked very good. Where is your confidence level with Lance McCullers Jr., knowing that the next time we see him, it's going to be postseason baseball?
I feel really good. I think the only thing that I have any kind of issue with is the fact that, just like you talked about, and we've seen, the biggest shortcoming that he has, if without being an oxymoron, is the fact that I don't think he can go that deep into a game. I think that if you get six out of Lance McCullers, I think you've exceeded expectations because of the fact that he throws a lot of pitches now, that he dabbles a lot on the corners. And even when he has his best stuff, he's probably going to throw a significant amount of pitches to where he's not going to go much deeper than six innings.
Yeah.
So you're going to have the back end of your bullpen ready. But overall, getting guys out, keeping you in the game, staying competitive for those six innings, I feel total confidence that, again, I said I wasn't going to talk about him or consider him for the playoff roster till he came back and showed me, you know, 8 to 10 starts. He's done all that. He's done everything I could have asked him to do, and I believe he is firmly planted as the third starter in this rotation.
Astros have the luxury of having the best bullpen in all of baseball. This isn't like, you know, in previous years where you were trying to piece together innings. I mean, even last year, you're trying to piece together innings for how you're going to get to the back end of the bullpen, how you're going to get from the fourth inning to the sixth inning. So if Lance McCullers if Lance McCullers goes six innings every single start in the playoffs, I would take that. I might even take five innings every single start. Postseason baseball, managers take out pitchers like
they
that.
Mm-hmm.
They have the quickest hooks you'll ever see. Mm-hmm. So if like Lance can give you six innings, you feel pretty comfortable about that. Lance's numbers, look, it's been eight starts, so it's, you know, probably not fair to compare it to previous years. His numbers stack up with the numbers he had last year. His ERA is way better. Now, that was probably a little bit fluky because he only started eight games. The whip is right around the same spot. The strikeouts per nine, a little bit less, but not anything that's like substantial. So it seems like Lance McCullers is back to being Lance McCullers. I mean, I'm as confident with Lance McCullers in 2022 that I was in 2021.
I'm almost there, but I'll say this. What he did in that final inning last night showed me everything I needed to see. Took the meat of the Phillies order and struck all three guys out and had just, I mean, good accuracy. Even the balls that he missed were right on the black of the plate.
Yep.
And he was painting fastballs, and his curveball is devastating, as we know, when he's able to place it. And he was placing it last night in that last inning. You strike out the side there to finish your outing, and you tell me all I need to know in terms of, is he ready for the playoffs?
You know what I liked about that too is he showed that fire. Like,
yeah,
he
came off. Yep.
Like, call me crazy, but it seemed like playoff form. You know,
yeah.
It seemed like, oh, I want to finish my start. I see the finish line. I know this is my last inning. Let me empty the tank. Empties the tank with a very strong inning and then showed some emotion coming on the field. It was almost like he was gearing himself up for playoff Lance McCullers.
And I think the other thing, Jeremy, that you have to be concerned about going into that start is, regardless of what the health issues were, it derailed him from staying on schedule to do the things that he was doing to be able to show that from his arm to his body and everything that goes with it, that he was ready for the playoffs. If he gets weak at all and he misses a start and maybe, you know, he's not as stretched out or, you know, he's the endurance isn't there, that could be a concern going into the playoffs. He put everything to bed last night, and that's massive.
We don't know exactly what the four-man playoff rotation is going to be. And the way that the ALDS is scheduled, I mean, Verlander can pitch on full rest in Game 4. Now, whoever's starting Game 2 is not going to be on full rest for Game 5. If we assume that Javier is your Game 4 starter, he can pitch out of the bullpen in Game 1. But if we think that those are the four guys, do you have any objection that those are the four guys? Verlander, Fromber, McCullers, and Javier?
Correct.
All right, those are the four guys. 713-780-ESPN if you object. 713-780-3776. Power rank those Astros playoff starters. Which of those starters do you trust the most in the playoffs, 1 through 4?
As of right now, to me, Verlander is 1. And Fromber is going to be 2. But Fromber, after the streak ended, has been a little shakier than I would have liked. But I think that in the playoffs, Fromber has given me every reason to have trust and confidence in him. So I think it's just exactly how they stack up in the rotation. To me, it's going to be Verlander, it's going to be Fromber, it's going to be Lance, and then it's going to be Javier. Because the sleeper to me is that you got a guy in Javier that might have some of the best stuff in all of baseball as your fourth starter. So if, God forbid, you get down in a series and you're wondering how you have to tinker with your rotation, you probably don't have to tinker much knowing a guy that has that good of stuff is coming up as your fourth starter.
I agree with you that that's going to be the rotation.
Mm-hmm.
I disagree on my individual power rankings. Okay. I differ on it. Verlander at the top. He's the Cy Young. He's been phenomenal this year for the Astros. My second that I have the most confidence in is Christian Javier. He's been as steady as they come most recently, and his numbers are actually better than Fromber's.
Because of the recent things that have happened, I don't disagree with you that I can see a path to getting to exactly to what you just did, because I thought about it.
Mm-hmm. I go Javier 2. I actually go Lance McCullers 3 and Fromber Valdez 4. And you're like, whoa, all those consecutive quality starts. Fromber's been a little shaky lately.
He has.
I would love for Fromber to put my nerves at ease in his final start tomorrow. But he's been a little bit shaky lately. And look, in the back of my mind, I remember last year's playoffs. Who was more reliable in the 2021 postseason? Was it McCullers or was it Fromber? Lance McCullers was at the top of your playoff rotation a year ago. I think Lance McCullers is back to 21 form. Fromber's been a little bit shaky the last two. My most, the confidence that I have from 1 to 4, it's Verlander, it's Javier, it's McCullers, and it's Fromber Valdez. 713-780-ESPN, what are your power rankings, your confidence power rankings for the Astros playoff rotation? 713-780-3776. Let's go out to the HRMP listener line. Jay, you're in the Hive with the Killer Bees. What's going on, Jay?
Hi, my name is Jay Cole from Canada, big Astros fan. First of all, I wanted to say real quick, I got to wonder, why with JV's last start, Cy Young on the line, what's this Dusty Baker benching everybody? He put a whole all rookie outfield and infield out. Like, don't you think that was kind of rude or like a no-no? Like, you could have got this guy the Cy Young. That goes for that record goes with the team, right? But then, I don't know if that's hand or there. But as far as, like, Lance McCullers, Dusty Baker put him in twice against the Chicago White Sox, who were a joke in the playoffs last year. And he's the reason his arm is hurt. But I don't think he's back. I don't think he's back to form yet. He had one good outing, and I don't know, like, I'm thinking Christian Javier should be for sure. And after last night, Luis Garcia, he's won 8 of his last 9, and he didn't lose the 9th, he just had no decision. I think that kid deserves a spot. He deserves a chance, put it that way.
Appreciate the call, Jay. I've liked a lot what I've seen from Luis Garcia, but I'm not bumping anybody in the four that we've mentioned. Lance McCullers, I don't know what Jay's alluding to when it comes to he's only had one good start. He's only had one bad start of the 8 that he's had, and that was against an Atlanta team. Even that one bad start, 3 runs over 5 innings. I mean, the Astros are capable of winning a game when a starting pitcher goes 5 innings and gives up the 3 runs. As far as the Verlander thing, look, and it sounded like Jay was not the biggest Dusty Baker fan. For whatever reason, I don't think Dusty Baker's big in Canada. I don't know. Maybe he hit a big home run against the Expos back in the day. I have no idea. Justin Verlander's odds to win the Cy Young are minus 10,000. It was not rude. Justin Verlander is going to win another.
Well, they're nicer up there, right?
I would think so, eh?
I think that's why. Well, here's
is it
up there and down here. The thing is all year we've seen the fact that they haven't put the most stellar lineup behind JV, and he's still done what he needed to do to be the hands down favorite to win it, the Cy Young. So I think that, yeah, I can see where you get a little bit perturbed sometimes about that kind of stuff. But overall, the pitcher has, like, the cream. He's rise to the top, and that's why he's going to be that award winner there.
Day One Donna said, well, you rested those outfielders. That way you can make sure you get to the playoffs healthy. That's a great point, Donna. 713-780-ESPN. What is your confidence ranking for the Astros starting pitchers entering the playoffs? Also, what more accurately represents who the Texans are? Their record? Or how close they've been late in game. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. Something that's always very accurate, and I feel like I do a good job representing that accuracy, is Prodon Coupes being the best basketball goal on the market. It is the very best, and there is no doubt about it. Some of the reasons why. Well, it's got the tempered glass backboard, gives you a true authentic feel. It's got the extended overhang underneath the basket, which gives you a clear path under the rim, which I'm always worried about spraining my ankle. I don't have to worry about that with the goals at Prodon Coupes. Also, competition-grade breakaway rim. That's perfect for dunking, hanging, keeping you safe. And the reason that's so important, because you can lower down the goals. They're adjustable. You can lower it down to 5 feet. Throw down some jams. Pretend you're Dominique Wilkins. You can raise it up to regulation. Work on your shot. Pretend you're Steph Curry. Durability is the strength of ProDunk Hoops. Stainless steel fasteners. Thicker steel. Exclusive rust armor, which makes them sturdy and strong. This is the time of season that you really want to get this, too. All of those 100-degree days, well, they're behind us. We have fall days ahead. Basketball season's about to start. Now is the time to do it. And one of the hangups for you might be, well, you don't want to install it. You don't have to worry about that because the pros will install the goal. The pros at ProDunk Hoops will come out to your house, come out to your driveway, and professionally install it at the perfect height and perfectly straight. You don't do it. Let the pros do all of the work for you. ProDunk Hoops goals come in a variety of sizes and options. That'll be the perfect fit for your driveway or yard. Give them a call at 281-351-9822 and visit ProDunkHoops.com. That's ProDunkHoops.com.
You're listening to The Killer Bees with Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios.
The Canadian caller was a big hit. Text line, loved them, eh? 713-780-ESPN. Speaking of, let's give away a couple of tickets. Actually, four tickets.
Ooh.
This is something that's always a lot of fun. The Houston's Original Greek Festival.
Oh, it is a blast.
It is outstanding. You call right now to 713-780-3776. Caller number four, to symbolize the four tickets we're giving away, is going to win four tickets to go to Houston's Original Greek Festival. Caller number four, 713-780-3776. Enjoy great food, dancing, family atmosphere, October 6th through 9th. So in 2 days, enjoy it over the weekend. Weather's supposed to be beautiful as well. Greek food is fantastic. All the dancing. Like, I'm not a huge dancer, but I like to watch the other people dance. I'm not sure if they're breaking plates at the Greek festival, but I'd
Nico
like them
to. Nico Nikos will be out there. My man Dimitri, who owns it, is out there working his tail off, serving the peeps. It's a good time.
Yeah, I like I've been a couple of times. Always enjoy it. So if you can't, if you didn't win the tickets, make sure that you head out to Houston's Original Greek Festival October 6th through 9th this weekend. Weather is going to be fantastic.
Uber.
Great thing to do.
I would Uber.
You're saying you're going to enjoy some of the spirits?
When you're at the Greek festival, you partake in quite a bit
of
drinking.
What is their go-to? Yeah, wine.
Drink
right?
a lot of wine.
Yeah. My wife loves Greek food. Whenever we were in Florida, there is a place called, I think it's Tarpon Springs, and they're a city on the water because they specialized in sponges. Like they dove, got the sponges, they supplied the sponges, it built up the city. But it's a Greek community.
Okay.
And we went there whenever I was in Florida, I guess in May. The Greek food's unbelievable.
You guys know this even from my single days living in Midtown, but I pretty much was at Nico Nico's about 4 or 5 times a week.
Really?
And yeah, and
what's
your
go-to?
Well, they had the Joel special that wasn't on
really?
The menu, but it was on the register. It was one button push, and it was the Greek salad with the grilled chicken breast and all that. But Nico Nico's is phenomenal food.
I never pronounce it right, but the sandwich is always, what is it, the Euro?
Euro?
Euro? Yeah, I always
Euro.
Like the Euro. I can't roll my R's. But that's my go-to. All right, so the Texans are 0-3-1.
Mm-hmm.
You've had Lovie Smith talk a lot of glass half full. A lot of the positives. He hates whenever you bring up the negatives. We're close. I've seen some good things. These are the positives. Like, I understand that hearing that is stale. Like, you're 0-3-1. You don't want to hear that sort of thing. I get that from, like, a fan base point of view. Like, you don't want to hear your coach be talking about all the positives and how close you are at 0-3-1. I don't think that Lovie Smith has a choice. Like, this is the type of things that you say when you don't think that your team is very good. Like, if you had a really good team and you're 0-3-1, you're not going to have that same tenor coming from your head coach. We saw this a little bit with David Culley last year. Now, it wasn't, like, as egregious. It wasn't as silly as David Culley with what Lovie Smith is talking about now. But it was always very positive. It was always about what we can do to get better. It was always like, you know, glass is half full. We're seeing the same thing with Lovie Smith. It's just that Lovie Smith can sell it a little bit better. He's not as silly as David Culley. But because of this roster being where this roster is at, I don't think that Lovie Smith has a choice or any coach has a choice but to have that kind of like conversation to the media when talking about this team.
I think that the biggest thing is we think that he's always saying things with the fan base in mind as he talks to the media. He also has to take in consideration that he's got 3/4 of a season plus left with his team. And his team needs to hear from their fearless leader that he has total confidence that we're close. We can turn this thing around, that it's a long season and there's plenty of opportunities, because if we just keep going on the path that we're going, you're going to break through. And once we break through, there's going to be no stopping us. And so I think a lot of that goes into what he says, too, because as much as a lot of players say they don't read the clippings and watch the news, they do.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of coaches, and believe me, I've worked for a few, that believe that they are not big on one-on-one confrontations, but if they put it out in the media, the message will be delivered. And I think that's kind of what he was doing right there, is a kind of an extension of the coaching that happens during practices and in the locker room, basically saying, guys, I haven't quit on you guys. I believe in you guys. I think that there's a chance that we can still do the things that we set out to do when we had goals at the start of the year.
Even whenever, like, there's some players that I think can tune it out, but even those players that can tune it out, like, the media is going into the locker room then asking
about it. Oh, they're going to grill them about
it. Lovey just said this. So you're going to hear about it, even if you're trying to, you know, shy away from it, even if you're trying not to hear about it. So I don't think that Lovey really has a choice. I know it's annoying from a fan base, but I don't think Lovey really can do anything else. But what more accurately represents who the Texans are? Their record, 0-3-1, or how close they've been late in game?
There's no doubt about it. It's the record. They are who their record says they are. And, you know, you can say moral victories all you want, but there's a reason why most real professional players and coaches believe there are no moral victories in this game. Your record clearly indicates who you are and what kind of team you are, because good teams find a way to win close games, and they didn't do that. And, you know, bad teams find a way to give away leads or having opportunities present themselves that you can't capitalize on, and they've done that. And so, to me, it's very simplistic in the fact that the record indicates who you are, and especially with this team and the way they've performed, it clearly defines who this year's Houston Texans are.
I'm of the same thought. NFL games are close. The Texans got beat, I think, pretty handedly, even though they had an opportunity to take the lead in the fourth quarter. They had the ball with the chance to do that in the fourth quarter. Mm-hmm. That game was a 5.5 spread in Vegas. So it's not like, you know, even whenever you have the Chargers coming into NRG Stadium, that many people expect a 2-touchdown win. It's not college football where Michigan against Rutgers is going to be favored by 35 points. Games are close in the NFL. The teams that have success, the teams that have a winning record, the teams that go to the playoffs, they win more of those close games than they do not. So, like, even though the Texans are close, they're not getting it done.
Right.
It was what Bill Parcells said it, right? You are what your record is.
Yep.
Like, the Texans are what their record is. They are the 0-3-1. And if you want to actually break it down a little bit more, too, the games that they've been close in, Texans haven't played a tough schedule. They have not played a tough schedule out of the gate other than the Chargers, but that game was at home.
I mean, look, you're still trying to figure out what Indy is, but first week,
it's been a huge letdown.
Yeah, Indy was completely overrated in week one.
The Chiefs game is like the biggest anomaly of the season, because outside of the Colts beating the Chiefs, they've been a train wreck the rest of the year. Like, I have no idea. They've schemed it
they
up.
Got they worked had a great by game Tennessee. Plan. Those were supposed to be the top two teams in the division. Neither team looks like gangbusters, but Tennessee did more and looks like a better team than most people's preseason favorite to win the division, which was the Colts.
And they did a lot of things, too, to keep the Texans in that game. Every game the Texans have been in, the other team kept them in the game. If you want to go to Denver, I don't think Denver is very good. I know that they were 2-1 before they lost to the Raiders. I don't think Denver is very good.
And I don't think it's all on the coach.
In Denver?
Yeah.
Well, I would agree with that. You think part of it's Russ?
I think Russ, and I think if they had it to do all over again, they would not have extended him with that guaranteed $160 million.
I mean, if you're trading for what you, if you're sending what you sent to trade for him, I don't think you have a choice.
Well,
once you make the trade decision, you have to pay him.
You can pay him short term. I don't think you have to pay him that much.
I don't think it was a good trade. Like, if you want to even go, like, I agree with you. I just feel like those things are coupled together. Like, if you're trading for what you think
is a
top 10
quarterback. Well, it's like
Laramie
Tunsil, right? Yeah. If you're going to trade that many assets to get him, you damn well better have an extension agreed to before you trade with him. The Texans didn't. They ended up paying even more because of it, and that's a massive mistake. I just think you could have gotten him locked up, but you could have done it probably for a shorter term.
I don't disagree. I don't think it was a good trade for Denver. Denver's so desperate for a quarterback. And then the Chicago game. Like, we've talked widely about Chicago. We think that Chicago could still be one of the worst five teams in the entire NFL. So those three games out of the gate, all of those teams have played poorly. Colts, the only exception was against the Chiefs. All three of those teams did things that kept you into the game, and then the Chargers were beating up on you until the Chargers started to do some things that let you in the game.
And we painted the picture for you with the Chargers. It's a get-right game. It's a revenge game from a year ago. It's an Eckler that's been down this season, getting right against a team that can't stop the run and has proven to have weaknesses on defense. It's a quarterback that we know, whether he's dinged up or not, even if he's down a receiver, he's a guy that if you give him any kind of an opening, he's going to jump through it and he's going to take full advantage. And that's exactly what they did across the board. And on the flip side of it, your quarterback showed you exactly who he's been for the first quarter of the point of the season. It's not what anybody wanted. It's not ideally what you had hoped for, but it is what it is. And that's who Davis Mills has been through the first four games of the season. You have to take that into consideration and go, I don't care what my champagne wishes and caviar dreams are for however grandiose for Davis Mills or this team. You call it like you see it. That's what their record says they are. And that's exactly, they're lucky to have a half a point. Whether it counts or not as a half a win or not, they're lucky to at least have a tie.
Yeah, they blew that game too, but you're right. 0-8-3-0, I thought Pep was supposed to be this great offensive mind, but so far the play calling has been pretty dull. Is that due to the player personnel or the coaching?
But can I say something on that again? Because I think it needs to be brought up one more time. Pep Hamilton, there's definitely plenty to scrutinize there. But I firmly believe, too, as a play caller, I'm not going to play a call that I don't believe I have the weapons to execute. If I have plenty of plays in my playbook that could open it up, but I don't believe enough in my quarterback, which we know your head coach has also shown that he doesn't really believe in his quarterback to go do something like that. But if Pep doesn't believe Davis Mills can execute the play he wants to call if he had his dream scenario, and he didn't believe in Pierce maybe because of blocking more than running, and he didn't believe in his receivers getting open, at least Nico Collins, then he's not going to call a play no matter how dynamic and forward-thinking it would have been. He's going to call the play that he thinks his team can execute.
The counterpoint to that, though, is that he looked better under Tim Kelly than Pep Hamilton. I mean, he looked better in the last five-game stretch than he had in 21 than he did in the four-game stretch. I think it's both. There's some times whenever I'm looking back on the Texans game and I'm watching some of the plays where I'm like, okay, this isn't great. But then there's other plays where I'm like, that's there. Damian Pierce, I mean, he had a 75-yard touchdown run. That was there. Mm-hmm. So there's times whenever I see some things that Pep's doing, we're like, okay, that's not bad. And there's other times I'm like, oh, that was a dreadful play call. I think Pep is an average offensive coordinator and a play caller in the NFL. I think he's a really good quarterback coach.
Yep.
I think he's an average play caller, and I think Davis Mills is right there with him. I think he's pretty, probably below average, as an NFL starter. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. So most people assume that Lovie Smith is guaranteed another year. Everybody thinks that there's no way that Lovie Smith is not back. But is that okay? It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Hey, before we go to the break, I want to tell you about Doc Linville. I have been a big fan of Doc Linville for a long time, ever since he introduced me to the NeoGraft procedure. The NeoGraft procedure is amazing, and it is a game changer because it's your own hair being transported where you have a ton of it and you're never going to lose it. And genetically, the studies show you're never going to lose your hair on the sides or in the back, back part of your head. But you have plenty of areas that can be thinning. You might have a baboon's butt showing on the top and the back. You might have a forehead that's turned into an 8-head, and you don't think there's anything you can do other than shave your head. Well, it's basically the NeoGraft procedure, people. It's not covering it up with sprays and foams and creams. It's taking care of it by taking your own hair, putting it where you need it, and getting a fuller, thicker head of hair. It's a fantastic procedure. And for you listeners of ESPN 97.5, you can get the process started at no cost to you. Normally, a consultation with Doc Linville's office costs $150. For you, it's absolutely free if you just go to 975hair.com. You go to 975hair.com right now, and they're going to give you a free consultation. Go in, open-minded, ask all the tough questions. How much does it cost? How long is the procedure? What's the recovery like? How long before I see the true results of the procedure? And the big one that got me, the success rate of every follicle moved, 95%+ success rate. That's the number that made a difference for me. That's the one that really convinced me to make sure I did the procedure. That's why I'm so happy today with the hair that I've gotten. I've gotten my 8-head back to a 4-head thanks to Doc Linville. He can do the same kind of things for you. Check him out today, 975hair.com.
All teams covered, no talking points necessary. You're back with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
We'll get into Lovie Smith being here next year as the head coach. Everybody thinks that there's no chance the Texans would move on from Lovie Smith. There's no chance the Texans have a new head coach in 2023, but is that okay? Is that all right? We'll do that in a moment. But first, let's go out to the HRMP listener line, 713-780-ESPN. Gary wants to talk some Texans. Gary, what's going on?
Hey, how's it going, guys? Hey, just wanted to say, answer to your question, the Texans are bad. The game being close is not very indicative. I don't actually think they've played, you know, a good team. They've played other teams that are bad or below average or injured. Like Chicago is a terrible team. Indianapolis is not that great. Denver hasn't played that well this year. And I think the Chargers will be good, but they're missing like half of their key players. So I think we're as bad as the record says. We're just playing teams that are also bad, just not as bad as we are. And I do want to say this as like the resident Casario critic. It's very early, but Sauce Gardner is having a better season than Derek Stingley. And I mean, I know that's kind of a niche point, but frankly, there was no reason for us to draft Stingley, and we chose him over Gardner, who was supposed to be a higher pick. And so far, it's early once again, but Gardner looking much better than Stingley. So that's all I had.
Appreciate the call, Gary. He's right about, look, we were talking about that with the other teams. The other teams aren't good. Chargers are hurt. I think the Chargers are a good team. I think they played pretty well, especially in the first half against the Texans on Sunday, but they were playing the Texans. As far as the Stingley Sauce thing goes, I can't remember where you were at on that. I wanted Sauce. I was huge on Sauce Gardner.
You were big on Sauce, and I just said, look, I understand. I think they're both going to be really good football players. To me, the deciding factor is if you got two guys that are on the same kind of parallel in terms of their abilities and their potential, I take the guy that hasn't had a health problem. I take the guy that hasn't had an issue in the past, especially when you're talking about a defensive back as it relates to a foot injury. I wouldn't take the risk if I didn't have to. I don't want to worry about something going in before he even plays a meaningful game.
Yeah, I don't disagree a whole lot. I don't really disagree with anything that Gary said. That said, I've liked what I've seen from Derek Stingley, and he hasn't really had a chance to showcase a whole lot. You know, in the Colts game, you know, they didn't really throw a ton. The success that they did late in the game, but a lot of the success came on the ground. They were playing a lot of zone that game, too. They played very little man in that game. I don't know if that was by design. You know, trying to ease Stingley into the NFL game. The next week against Denver, I think that there were moments where he looked okay, but for the most part lost the battle with whoever he was defending in the Denver game. Chicago, they just didn't throw the football. So, like, how are you going to grade a cornerback whenever the other team's not throwing the football?
We threw 11 times against Green Bay. Chicago did, yeah. And then did they throw about 17 times against the Texans?
Yeah. You're not going to evaluate what a corner's doing against Chicago and they're throwing it less than 20 times. I actually thought that Stingley played a little bit better in the Chargers game than what some people gave him credit for. A lot of Mike Williams' production was when the Texans were either in zone or the Texans had busted coverage that had nothing to do with Derek Stingley. So I've liked what I've seen from Derek Stingley while also agreeing with Gary that Sauce has looked like the better player so far. I'm not displeased at all with Stingley. I also am always, and I've talked about this a lot, I'm always in the back of my mind fearful that one of these receivers, whether it's London, whether it's Wilson, whether it's Olave, whoever, is going to turn out to be a top five receiver in the NFL. And if you gave me an option between having a top five receiver in the NFL or a top five corner in the NFL, I want the receiver. It was unconventional to take a corner that high.
Well, look, I think that when you talk about how important all the evaluations are, this was a heavy corner draft early and a heavy defensive lineman and offensive lineman draft early. And then there was a lot of jury that was kind of undecided on receivers. But you're also going based on the fact that the NFL with the different movement of Davante Adams and the Cheetah, and Tyreek Hill and others, A.J. Brown, that suddenly there's been a change in the landscape of the NFL that these receivers are getting these massive amounts of money and they become hyper-important as the running back position decreases and the quarterback position maintains its value. Mm-hmm. When you look at that, then you have to combat that. So you either have to go get one of those guys or you have to have a guy that can shut down one of those guys. If they didn't feel confident that any one of the guys at the top of taking them at the top of the draft at receiver was worthy of a pick that high and making that kind of a commitment, then they took a guy that could combat if that was the trend that was going to be successful in the league. So I don't get mad at them for doing
it. But the fear is that one of those dudes turns into it and they miss the evaluation.
Well, and then again, I have to go back and say I trust Nick's evaluation on talent based on how this draft has turned out so far, so that I will trust that he made the right assessment not only in the guys that he took, but the guys that he passed on. And so if he passed on receivers, then I'm going to believe that there was good reason to pass on them. And you're right. You know what? If he was wrong and he misses on a Drake London or a guy that ends up being the guy on a team for an extended period of time, then that's another reason why you point a finger at Kasari. But I think it's hard to sit there and nitpick a guy that looks like he's hit on almost every pick in his first four rounds. We've got two inconclusives because of the two Alabama kids. But where did he miss? Pierce is a fourth-round pick as your starting running back.
Sure.
Stingley's starting. Green is probably – we knew he was going to make mistakes.
But Stingley starting isn't a win. Stingley being a starting corner isn't a win, especially if the guy that got drafted right behind you is a better player. That's
but
not
that's
a win.
Short term. We know that guys are going to have different ebbs and flows in their rookie season. So I don't think it's fair to like make a complete evaluation.
You can't all of a sudden say this is it and that's the way it's forever going to be. But you can also evaluate through four games
when
and
that
say
he's
so
healthy,
far.
When that he's starting. When that he's learning.
But
now, I don't know
that he's not as good as Sauce.
Okay, right. And again, I knew that we were going to have this conversation all year because we said it's you should. You should look at it, and that should be something that Nick should possibly have to answer to if he got that wrong. But I think that just in terms of how his whole draft went, your two first-round picks look like they're going to start and they're going to be good, valuable picks. They're going to contribute to your team. I mean, your second-round pick, your third-round pick, your fourth-round picks, you're looking at guys that look like they're going to be meaningful members of your squad. We don't know what Christian Harris is going to be yet. We should find out shortly, at least the start of the process. You hope Mechie's contributing next year. But overall, the fact that Pierce is your starting running back in the fourth round, that's a big win.
Yeah. I mean, both things can be true, though, right? Like, you could have a player that you draft at number three that looks like he's going to be fine, that he's going to be
but he's not going to be
a
that
foundational
standout.
Piece, but also that you didn't get the pick right. I think you could point to Jadeveon Clowney.
Sure.
He was drafted the first overall pick in 2014. He's had a fine professional career. Like, he's been a good pro, but he's not lived up to the hype
of
1-1.
A lot of people think, remember the Reggie Bush and Mario Williams discussion. Yeah. A lot of people still think you should have taken Reggie Bush.
Like, Jadeveon Clowney's been a good pro. That's not like a bust by any stretch of the imagination. But Khalil Mack went 5. Yep. Like, which of the two has had a better year? Aaron Donald went 13.
But that's why hindsight being 2020 and everybody always goes to the fact that that's the easiest thing that you can say in hindsight that Khalil Mack went where he did. A lot of people saying he didn't play anybody. His one time he played against Ohio State, he showed out. But other than that, playing at Buffalo with the schedule that he played in college, it's hard to say that how that equates to the NFL game. If a team's willing to take that risk and it works out to, and they get the reward, I don't think you should punish the other general managers that passed on him.
I think that's tough.
Come on, Jeremy.
I think that's tough.
When you bring up the Clowney example, he got more draft pub and credit.
You're not going to
criticize for the hit that he made on the Michigan running back and the fact that he was a physical specimen.
Clowney should have been the number one pick that year. Like, there's no...
Yeah, you just didn't know how his toughness and everything would equate to how he turned out as an NFL player.
But what are you paying general managers to do, though? Like, you're paying general managers to hit in the draft, to hit in free agency, to player evaluate, and to be better than anybody else. So,
but
like,
as a general manager, to protect your own, cover your own butt along the way.
See,
look, we talked about
I don't
this.
Like that, though. I don't like the safety.
You don't have to like it.
Let's be safe. Like, I just... That's why I always, like, encourage bravado. Would it have been a bravado pick if you take Khalil Mack number one instead of Jadeveon Clowney? Yes, absolutely. But that bravado nets you the best player in that. Well, Aaron Donald was the best player in that draft, but it nets you the better player between the two.
But again, we've talked about this as it relates to general managers. You want a guy that's willing to trust his own gut and his own intelligence to draft the guy that he wants no matter what. And in this case, Kasario wanted Stingley. They said, you know, it was documented how many trips he made to LSU, how he was enamored once he saw him a couple times. This was his guy. I like the fact that he went and got it. But can that backfire? Of course it can. Look at Dave Gettleman. Dave Gettleman, you know, went out and not only took Daniel Jones, but he took him at number 8 instead of number 17. And then all of a sudden, he set himself up to the fact that his career could be cut shorter because of that kind of decision. Some general managers are going to play it safe. They know that they like a player more, but they know that there's a higher risk involved. They're not willing to take that risk because they like their paycheck.
I get that. I'm not employing that general manager. Okay. I'm not employing the GM that's playing it.
Then you got to have a savvy owner, too. And that owner, I don't think you have – you don't have a savvy owner like that in Houston that's going to say, that's the kind of guy that I need, and I'm going to pass on this guy. Because Jack Easterby picked your general manager.
Yeah. Now – Jack Easterby could be right, though. At the end of the day, Kasario could be really good. I don't think Kasario plays it safe, though. I think Nick Kasario has been unconventional. Josh McCown ring a bell. His coaching hires have been atrocious. But if you look at it, just player evaluation, drafting a corner at number 3 is unconventional. Drafting a guard in the middle of the first round is unconventional. Nick Kasario has been unconventional.
Okay. And then, like I said, I will trust him that these guys are going to work out, and then we'll evaluate him along the way. But I think that Jack Easterby may have picked McCown first. He might have been the guy that brought him to the table first before Kasario even started to consider him. So at that point in time, we knew that this that was thankfully, as we talked about earlier in the show today, that Easterby's situation is a lot different than it was a year ago or when he got really involved in a lot of things. So we don't know who played a role in it to what degree, but we know that that was unconventional thinking in itself. Now you're looking at a guy that's making the calls, that's in total and complete control and in charge, and it looks like he has a firm idea what he wants and if he and who he wants, and if he wants that player, he's going to go get him.
713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. All right, Lovie Smith. Most people think he'll be back next year. Is that okay? Is it all right that Lovie Smith would be the head coach of the Texans in 2023? 713-780-ESPN. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.